Colonel Burke, Reel 10.
But it was more vulnerable to a shell because it wasn't like the earth. It stood up like a wall. And there was always these repairs to do. And then towards the evening, you had your meal, and then you stood to...
We've missed out on dinner, the midday meal.
Well, there was no midday meal. The men fed when they wanted it, really. You see, I mean, there was no communal kitchen where you cooked for the company. Each man cooked himself. The only thing he cooked was his tea. Otherwise, he had a tin of bully beef between two, a loaf of bread between five or six, and an onion. Well, you ate the onion raw, you see. Well, the only thing you warmed up was your tea.
How did you warm the tea up?
Well, you had little bits of oil, a little bit of waste, and made a sort of fire. Sometimes you had these, like they have today, these little, what do you call them, burners. But it was all very primitive, you see, and it took hours to get a cup of tea. Yes.
Was there never any hot food served in the trenches?
No, it couldn't be. How could there be? You couldn't have kitchens or lights or anything, Jane. If there was any hot food, and that was very occasionally, it came up at night in dixies and hay boxes. But by the time it got to the troops and up to the front line, because where the limbers could come and where the front line actually was probably 2 miles further on. Mm. And that 2 miles had to be got through by trench. And whereas you can walk at about 3 miles an hour, it took you all probably to do that. It took you an hour and a half to do, easily to do that. Anything short of 2 miles took you a couple of hours.
I imagine, if for no other reason than people were simply used to having a meal early in the morning, a meal in the middle of the day, and a meal in the late afternoon or early evening, that they probably would eat their food about those times, even though there was no communal cooking.
Well, they ate it when they got it, because they were hungry, and they were always hungry, and wet and cold. Mm. You see, some of them were waiting for the thing to come up. The only thing you had to see was each man got his fair ration. What he did with it and how he consumed it was his fault, but he knew it had to last 24 hours. Mm. And he carried in his haversack a little bag with a tin of bully and three hard-tack biscuits. Well, a dog couldn't bite them, they were so hard. And it was an absolute fence to touch those under any condition unless you got the order of an officer. Only once did I give the order to the whole of my service for the iron ration, and that was during the March retirement of 1918, when we couldn't find any rations. It wasn't a case of coming up to us, we fell back on them. We couldn't find any, so we had to eat our iron ration. That was the only time we did it.
Was there any, were there any particular features of routine, no. Explain that a bit more.
Well, you put your sentries on for 2 hours. So if there were three men in a thing, it was 2 hours on and 4 hours off, you see. And that's how the progress of time went, and how probably you knew the time of the day by the time the different sentries were posted. Well, they were posted by the corporal or the lance corporal, you see. It wasn't an officer's job to go doing that. I mean, he'd be on the run all day long.
So there was nothing between stand down in the morning and stand to in the evening as a sort of regular occurrence?
No, unless... unless the sudden attack came or anything, you see. But at night, of course, you could tell that by very lights and flares and start of artillery. But even when artillery came, the fellow on the spot generally said to the fellows, well, get ready now. If any were asleep, woke them up in case this bombardment wasn't just a harassing thing and a thing to annoy you, but it might be the forerunner of an attack, you see.
Well, let's take it from the evening then. Tell me about what the routine would be in the evening.
Well, the evening you had your sentries posted just the same. Well, then probably you'd have orders from your colonel that he wanted you to go out and inspect the enemy's wires to see if the few shells that come over from our batteries had done anything. So then you went out with four men. And you groped about in no man's land, making as least noise as you could, so as not to attract attention.
This was checking the wire, you were saying?
Yes.
Yes. What kind of problems would you have with checking the wire, and how would you deal with
it? Well, to start with, we had to get through our own. And having got through our own, then you'd gradually get over to the enemy's, and you'd then go parallel down more or less what you thought was your front. If I came out, say, on the left of my sector, I hoped I'd gone straight across, so that I'd have to do, we'll say, 50 yards or 100 yards down to the right. Then I'd come in that way. And you had your men had to be very alert during the time any patrol was out. Because if you went out on the left and you hadn't told the fellows on the right, well, when they heard you coming through the wire, they'd start shooting. So you had to be very careful that way.
Do any of these wiring expeditions stick in your mind for any reason?
No, I don't think they do, really. Mm. But we had, you see, that was a patrol, different from a wiring. But a wiring party that would go out, which wasn't known as a patrol, a wiring party that would go out, and you would have to send a screen of troops in front of them, with their rifles naturally loaded, while the fellows worked. Well, now, if you had wooden stakes, you had to bump them in with a mallet. Well, that made noise. Well, then when the noise came, up went flares. And when the flares came, you stood stock still or threw yourself down into the muddy water. And that occurred till probably the Boche got so fed up they started shelling you. Then everyone gradually retreated. The wiring party went in first, and the screen came in after.
So I see that the patrol was really just to inspect the wire.
Inspect their wire, or you might be sent out on a patrol to try and get into their trench and bring back a prisoner for identification purposes, to know what unit was opposite them.
Yes, but the patrols differed from the wiring parties in that one was just an inspection and the other one was to do actual construction of fortifications.
Yes.
Were there any particular methods in building up your wire fortifications?
No, we always did a very silly one, I thought, very thin, and they're called the apron fence, which was a line of pickets 6 foot apart, four or five strands of wire going off that, and then the apron coming down each side and pegged to the ground. Well, naturally, it was much easier to get up than the German wire, which was about, many times 6 feet wide.
Yes.
And apart from the stakes and the wire, then the wire twisted everywhere. Well, it took an awful lot of cutting. And many times when we were going to do an attack or a raiding party, we took the engineers with us with what is known as Bangalore torpedoes. And they were long things which screwed into one another, and you push forward, set a fuse to them, came back, and it blew the wire apart. But even then, probably the gap wasn't wide enough, and the element of surprise had gone because you couldn't get through.
When you were laying your apron curtains, as you described it.
Apron fence, yes.
Was the actual physical carrying and handling of this stuff very difficult? Did you have any particular equipment? And
no, one or two had these gloves, but the remainder were doing it with their bare hands. And of course, men got cut badly, and then that's another thing. You had to see that it was covered well with iodine when they came back. Otherwise, they get septic sores and septicemia. And they'd make a lot of it to get out of the line, you see. So.
Did the wiring party work as a team, each member of which would have a particular job to do?
Yes. There was the fellow who had to hold the stake. There was the man who had to, if it was an iron one, screw it in, or if it was a wooden one, knock it in. and there were the fellows with the wire letting it out while the other one fixed it to the... it was a regular... There was a regular job, which each man had his job, like in a Lewis Gunn team or a Bren team.
Well, we've been going through the sort of routine of a day in trench life, and we're now in the middle of the night, and you've told me about patrols and wiring parties. What else were the main features of in routine life in the trenches during the night?
Well, again, sometimes you couldn't do any repairing by day, so repairing your trenches. It was maintenance job in trench warfare most of the time, maintenance of the trenches, improving them. Sometimes we dug dugouts if it was possible, but it wasn't in this up in the north possible because of the they'd opened the dikes and it flooded the whole of the land. You see, it was as bad for them as it was for us. They realised that afterwards.
Yes. What were the main problems or discomforts of trench warfare during this period? And what about sort of personal cleanliness? Was that a problem? What sort of physical condition did the men get into?
Well, if there was enough water, they managed to shave. But, with a mug of water, 10 or 12 people could shave, you see. But you just dipped it in after and wiped your face with the edge of your towel. There was no keeping clean. You did that when you came out.
Yes.
You managed to get a bar, probably, when you came out. The battalion went back probably to a school. I can remember going back to a school. Oh, no, it was a bleaching factory. Bleaching factory, that was it. And there were huge tubs which took eight men. And those eight men got in and scrubbed one another. And there were trolleys brought up. And all your uniform was put on the trolley. And that was taken away to another room where French women ironed out the seams to kill the lice. Wasn't washed. Ironed out the seam to kill all the lice. Well, it came back stained and iron mould and anything, but it was drier than when you gave it to them because they, where they'd ironed, naturally it had dried the thing. Mm. You sometimes got a clean shirt. You always got clean socks. And... that was it, that was your bath. Well, then when you were in billets, you see, you might be at a farmhouse. The men slept in the loft in straw. Well, they went down and they had endless water and buckets. And they could shave and do everything normally. A bit rougher, but more like when you're under canvas in this country.
Mm-hmm. I see. Going back to the trenches, did they become pretty dirty, in fact?
Well, of course, they were always dirty. There was never a clean trench, dry, that you could brush out. You were always over your boots, and sometimes just below your knees in thick mud, creamy mud. So, I mean, you see, duckboards became impossible in those conditions because they floated. And you could break your leg standing on a duckboard that suddenly gave way, you see. So... one had no duckboards. One tried draining the trenches and putting the duckboards on wood platforms, but it was an awful job and it was never satisfactory.
How could you try to drain the trench?
By digging it bigger and putting two pieces of wood joined together, you see, down into the bottom with notches on them where the duckboard rested 12 or 14 inches above it. There was so much water, it overcame, so it soon gave up that job. Mm.
This continual immersion in water, what sort of health problems did that create?
Well, the men had colds and that sort of thing, but those days they didn't take any notice of them. But your feet got soft, you see. In the winter it was terrible. You could get frostbite and that. You lost a lot of men. Well, not so much at the beginning of the war, but in 17, that very bad winter. My God, we lost hundreds more, I should think, with frostbite and what they call trench feet than wounded.
What was trench feet?
Same thing, but the frostbite was a further stage of it. When you took your boots off, all your, like a washerwoman's hand, you know, all wrinkles, all your tone, everything was shrunk and terrible. Awful, there was very little feeling in them.
Mm-hmm.